The road to Croke Park has featured big two-pointers, late drama, and a wrong turn, and Enniskillen.
You drove almost a sixth of the way across the country in the wrong direction!
Ahead of Sunday's All-Ireland final clash of Donegal and Kerry, relive the full story of this year's football championship with a new three-part podcast. The Road to Croke Park, the football championship. Available for free in your OTB GAA and Football Pod feeds.
Vinny Perth in the studio. Good morning, Vinny.
Good morning.
We're discussing whether it's Colm or Cullum. Because I have a very good mate from home in Monaghan who is Colm.
Yeah.
Spelled the same way, C-O-L-M.
Yeah.
But in Munster, apparently, they do it differently.
And what do you call him?
I call him Colm. But I've started to accidentally call him Cullum because you ask everyone to call you Cullum.
It's the pronunciation, the correct Munster pronunciation. But it is fascinating here in the office, right? So then you have Owen from Kerry, no bother to Monshane, Cullum. Mm. Funnily enough, Nathan from Mayo, no bother, Cullum. But then Ger from Kildare, Colm. And he tries, in fairness, to say Colm is best, but it's naturally Colm for him. It's naturally Colm for you.
Yeah.
It's all over. It doesn't
every
matter.
Every time I hear Rog calling you Colm, I'd be going, I have to start calling him Colm.
Thanks. Thank you. Thank you, Vincent.
But it feels like it's just one of them Cork things where it's like, this is our thing. I'm going to call him Colm.
Do it differently.
Yeah, his name is actually Colm.
Yeah. That's the pronunciation, yeah. And like Stephen Doyle said, if Colm in Dublin would be called Collie.
Collie.
Collie Baskell.
Do you have any nicknames, no?
Colm. Or Col. No, Col sometimes.
Yeah. Col is in Colm.
Yeah, see
what I mean?
Thanks for coming in, Vinny.
Morning.
Thank
How
you.
Are we doing?
Yeah. We were watching the goals earlier of Shamrock Rovers' 4-0 win last night over St. Joseph's over in Gibraltar. We were marking on the pitch, the Astro pitch, and just seemed like a strange enough setting for a game of that magnitude.
Yeah, I think you're at that round where you just about get away with a couple of things. Like, once you progress into those sort of third rounds and stuff like that, you start seeing, like, even in Ireland here, we have to move games from say, Talca Park to Tallaght Stadium, Richmond Park to Tallaght Stadium. So we're at that stage where that's sort of the end of that sort of thing you'll see, where a club like that would be expected to move to the national stadium once they progress past this round. But, like, in fairness, like, clubs, it is a European competition, so clubs from Malta, clubs from anywhere can turn up in this competition. And if that's the home ground and it meets certain criteria, it doesn't have to have three stands, four stands, only has to have one with dressing rooms and et cetera, and the pitch has to pass a certain test, even Astro. So, but the standard rises as the competition rises. So, look, it wasn't a great look, but at the same time, Rovers were ultra professional, weren't they? And
yeah.
It just looked like if you put yourself in the shoes of the opposition, they just look like a seasoned sort of European team who do this year in, year out, and they have done it for the last number of years, got past these rounds with ease.
The performance itself, like, obviously, was it a 5-day break from the last game, and they only maybe had four players picked over from the starting 11? You could kind of tell that, like, to have a little bit of a break, the freshness helps, doesn't it?
Yeah, there'll be this commentary around, you know, how this team is going to do, because they'll have Europe coming up. To be fair to the league, they've set it up that a lot of the teams are looked after around the early rounds. My argument, we're getting to the stage where we're winning that many rounds in the first round, we should actually do it over the next month, because you'll find when Rovers need to play a big game, a playoff game, they may be sort of looking at another sort of big league game in between it over the next few weeks. So they'll probably need to hand it a little bit further down the road. But at the same time, you look at the draw for the next round, the FAI Cup, they got Longford Town at home. So again, that feels like, and they won't say it publicly, another week where they can almost take certain amount of players a week off. So they're in a really strong position. Yeah. And I think it's brilliant, because we've come from a time where summer footballing has really benefited the Irish sides, and also adding to that the professionalism and all of that stuff. And now we're starting to, like, it's a massive shock if our clubs are going out in round one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sometimes round two. So it's come a long way.
That's exactly where I was going next, was that it did feel like a time where we'd be almost celebrating Shamrock Rovers winning 4-0 in a European game, but it does seem not commonplace now, but certainly more regular. And then you have Pats as well. Now, albeit they had two men extra for 21 minutes plus injury time, but they get the late winner at home to Cailleau. And it's like, yeah, that's part of the norm. But maybe is the reason that we're kind of slightly taking it for granted is that these games are just not accessible for people to watch.
Yeah. And that,
you know, like, what I mean? You'd have to almost follow it to know what happened last night.
Yeah, and that is a problem, but I don't know what the solution is. I mean, I
know you can't show every game it's still a European game.
You could kick someone like RTA, you could kick anybody, but like, imagine covering the Shamrock Rovers game last night. I mean, it's not, for the casual viewer looking in going, what is this, to be fair? So there comes a level where you've got to give people a little bit of break in terms of a lot of these first rounds. You see it when you play some, even the bigger sides, like I was lucky enough to be involved in some bigger ties, and the national broadcaster would do a lot of the bigger games, but in the first round or two, it can be, and even the footage you get on the likes of the Y Scout where you're scouting teams, you can tell it's a club, sort of the club's footage for some of the earlier rounds. So look, it's a problem across Europe at this early stage, but then I think we need to do more, but it's more in when our clubs get past it. And it's now we're taking round one and two almost for granted. But once any of our clubs hit round three and round four, there has to be a little bit of support from media as much as possible.
It's a synopsis this week, so for the three European games that we've seen involving Irish teams, that it's kind of, okay, fair enough, this is where we are, where Shells lose comfortably enough to Carabag in the end. They have, you know, chances here and there. And then last night, Rovers beat Joseph's comfortably, and Pats do just enough, but very well taken goal by Forrester, and injury time to beat Cadieux. And it's like, yeah, that's pretty much where we are. We're kind of somewhere in the middle there. So we're not either under or overperforming.
Yes, I think that is true. We're starting to get closer to sort of breaking a ceiling where I think in the next 3-4 years, we can have two sides in a conference league. And I don't want to say this as in a derogatory way or in a putting them under pressure way, but almost it would be massive disappointment for me if Rovers don't get to the Conference League this year.
Yeah.
And that's coming from, so that is, for a side to be able to do that from not the Champions route, so UEFA have set up the Champions route, and to be fair to them, if you go back, to maybe 10-15 years ago, sides like Batay Borisov, Rosenborg, you remember them competing in the Champions League for 3 and 4 years in a row. Them days are more or less gone. Why? Because this Champions League has become this great big thing. You look at 5-6 Premiership clubs can nearly end up in the Italian clubs in the Champions League. So UEFA have created these competitions to look after the smaller sides and give some money back. And you can still have the odd Rosenborg or Bate, as I said, qualifying, but it's got so hard now that these competitions, there's huge money at stake for these Irish clubs, and we've got to push now, and Rovers qualifying, we need to be pushing now and saying, right, one team qualifying for a group stage Conference League is great, and have a regular side, because you look at Rovers now, they will win this tie. They will pay the champions of, I think it's Malta, 4-2 last night, Beccani and Florini, and it looks like they play a side that Balchini, who were knocked out by Larn last year. So they have a very winnable tie in the next round because of their seeding. So UEFA base everything on your seeding. Your country seeding comes first, and then how you've done over the last 5 years. So we need our sides. Like, why is it important for, say, Pats to win this round? Is if they do qualify for Europe next year, they've got last year's seedings, they've got this year's, and you keep building momentum. And I think we're getting closer to maybe two teams being able to end up in a UEFA conference. And you look at the trouble Shells are having, it's because they're not seeded. And you compare Shell's run this year compared to Rovers' run last year, they're chalk and cheese, because Rovers would be seeded in the Champions route, and Shells just hit a brick wall with Carabag, and then they'll hit another brick wall because they've to play the champions, Ludogorets or the Croatian champions, who drew 0-0 last night. So they'll most likely struggle to go out in that and grow that round. But then, so we should have two teams in a playoff game this year. So that's huge progress. And not just for winning games, but let's be clear, it's astronomical money, even at for air level. Yeah. Small money for European clubs, but huge money for these playoff games. So the rewards are there, and you can see why clubs will chase Europe, and they should be chasing Europe, and owners and people should be putting the managers under pressure and going, once you get into Europe, we need to see progression. I mean, you see it qualifying.
How far do you need to go, though, for the money to be game-changing? Because you don't get it straight away, I think I'm right in saying.
Yeah.
And it's also, you cover a lot of your own costs.
Yeah, but it's in the bank, and there will be certain things that's allowance. Like, I remember having, Shells have to fly to Azerbaijan. I done that flight a couple of years ago, and like it has to be a charter flight, and it has to. So the cost of that flight, I remember the time, was somewhere around 140,000. That's a huge amount of money for clubs at their level. Just that has to be paid like the airline has to be paid straight away. Well, I think there is a certain contingency from UEFA where there's a certain amount of early money done. What people will fear is if Rovers get to another group stage and then they win the league this year, means they probably end up 3 years in a row, bar, you know, a really bad result. Anything can happen in cup football. They could end up next year, 3 years in a row in a conference league where they've won 5 million, 5 million, 5 million. That's like 15 million against, say, a club they're competing with, say, Bowls, who've never earned a penny of European football potentially in them 3 years. So that's skewing it. But I'm okay with that in one sense. If we had, say, a club chasing to become the next Rosenborg, as I said, using them as a good example, or Malmo, that's okay, because the knock-on effect is they'll improve everything. They also have to bring in probably one or two players from outside the league to keep pushing and trying to not just do conference, do Europa League next. And then the knock-on effect is some of their players are available for other players, and standard improves underneath it all.
It's a tough prospect for Shell's players, isn't it, to face into a return leg, you know, 3-0 down against the side of real quality, albeit Shell's at the post early on and maybe were unlucky a couple of times. But it's a difficult place to go into that game next week. It's hard to know how to approach it.
Yeah, it's a huge learning for everybody because, as I said, some of the players we went up against a few years back, and I was at the game, and you're sitting in the cheap seats. Like I felt Qarabag were there to be got at a little bit more, and he probably showed them a little bit too much respect in the first half. Qarabag got at them a little bit too easy, and I think in reflection, the manager and the players will say we didn't do our job right in that, and they need to learn from that for the next game when they play Ludogorets or the Croatian champions, whoever it is. Because when you're at home in these European ties, it's not that you go gung-ho. You have to. That's the moment. Playing the first game at home in one is a lot easier, but it's also harder because you can get thumped over there 3-4-0, the game's over. So they left something behind them during the night, and they'll have huge regrets. I think they made a couple of mistakes, probably a couple, maybe tactically, that the manager might go, oh, I could have done this better, that better. They learn from it, and they shouldn't have been out of game going over there. It was a real tough they should have went over there. And I can only share my own experience. We played that exact same side a few years ago. And I take full, it's funny when you come out of management, you only remember where you failed. I failed in the first half of that Champions League game. I showed them too much respect. We set up the team wrong. And we went out, and any Dundalk fans will remember, we absolutely battered Qarabag in the second half. Pat Hubbin scored late. We hit the post two or three times. And I'll never forget that game because they were there to be got at. Mm. And we should have took a lead into that away game. And ultimately we went out, you know, by two goals. But we left it behind us. And Europe only comes around once a year, and sometimes once in a career, you know. So you have to learn from that going into the next game they have. And the home tie is so important to you that it's huge, and they'll have huge regrets on it.
It's amazing. That's the common factor in sports people, is they remember the failures, or, you know, things that you just don't remember fondly, much more than you do all the victories that you had as well. It's just, you hear it all the time from people.
Yeah, look, as a manager, I didn't have loads of victories, but as a coach, I was part of a brilliant setup that had great nights and different bits and pieces. But yeah, you remember that one where, like, there's two things that stick out in my mind from, I had a year and a half as a manager, lucky enough to win four trophies, but two things stick in my mind is I made a mistake in the Champions League game against Qarabag in the first half. And I made a bad substitution in the FAI Cup final that we lost on penalties. And they're the two things that I remember that I still go to bed at and go.
But if you'd won on penalties, you wouldn't have remembered that substitution.
No, of course you wouldn't. But I think it was a factor in the result.
This isn't a daily thought you have, is it?
Or
is
No, but it obviously, like anything, it becomes less in time. But like, we were, that side, and I think that side deserved it. And I take responsibility for what that side, if you know what I mean, that people would know what I mean about that Dundalk side from Stephen Kenny's area to that was sorted, the finish of it is they should have done the treble. And that treble was only ever done once by, you know, greatest manager of all time, Jim McLaughlin. And we've left the treble behind us and it was a piece of history that that team, I feel, deserved. That Dundalk team is up there. You can debate eras, but certainly in the last 20, 30 years, I debate anybody that tells me there's a better team than that Dundalk team and they probably deserve the treble. They won four or five trophies but left a treble behind them. And when I hear the Derry fans singing, you know, have you ever won the treble? It always irks me. They're brilliant away fans, but when they sing that song, I'd be like, oh. So stuff like that always does play in your mind, absolutely.
They'll be singing tonight. There's only three games in the League of Ireland Premier Division, but they're all fairly significant, particularly two of them, Vinny. So you have Cork City against Sligo Rovers. That's an absolutely enormous game at Turner's Cross for Cork City, who are 8 points adrift of Sligo, who are only a place above them. And then the other end of the table, you have Derry City entertaining Bohemians. So Derry just a point behind Bowes. And also you've got Galway against Waterford, and again they're paired in the league. Galway 8th, Waterford 7th. Might start with the bottom, the basement battle. Do Cork City have a hope at all?
Of course they do, yeah, absolutely. Like sport is fickle and form comes and goes and momentum is huge, but I think it has to start tonight.
It's tough for Gerard Nash so far, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's tough.
They were nil all at half time in the FA Cup as well last week.
Yeah.
Three winners.
That one I can handle. That can, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
But they've been given away. And we had a great debate with Johnny Dunleavy on the podcast this week. And he's covering a game tonight live on News Talk. But Johnny obviously captained them to win a Cork and that. And you can see the hurt in people in Cork. But none of them know who to blame almost. Some will blame the board and different decisions they made. Some are starting to blame the players and think they can do more. But it's probably I think all of the I don't know what goes up board level and I'm not close enough to Cork in terms of, you know, but it's for the second county, they need to get behind the team a little bit of fields. That shed should be it. What I mean, if you're a mid table team, I'd understand. By the way, in fairness, people of Cork, it's 25 quid a bloody ticket. It's ridiculous. But if you're a mid-table team, I could understand not huge numbers. But in Cork, the shed should almost be one of the most intimidating places to go. I've experienced it.
Yeah.
It is. I miss it. But at the same time, some of the stuff was said to me, put you on edge. It's brilliant. And I mean that in a I love it way.
Yeah.
And they need to get together and have a cut. But the players need to do that on the pitch. The management need to set up the team. They've given away, I use the term academy style goals. The two guys down there, great pedigree with academy players. But the players need to start now. Like they conceded after a minute and 50 seconds against Shells in two games ago. And then they're trying to play out from the back down in Waterford in the Munster Derby. Get robbed. And it's a schoolboy goal. So they've got to sort that part out on the pitch. But they need to win tonight. I think tonight is huge for loads of reasons. If they win tonight, then they can build something. You can whatever. But I think if they lose tonight, it almost feels like good night and thanks.
I think you're right. It's amazing. They've only won two out of the 24 games this season, where Sligo have won six. They've won three times the number. Cork City have drawn a lot of games, nine games.
But they were competitive under the previous manager, Tim Clancy, and they weren't
very rarely. One time away to Shamrock Rovers, he was very disappointed. He was on the show with us saying he was disappointed. But you're right, they were competitive for a lot of these games.
It felt like a little bit of inexperience was costing them in games. They were tactically, we were doing all the right things. Now it feels like, I mean, when Shells, the week before they played Linfield, they played Cork, and I just went, what a great game for them. Because it almost felt like a banker home win. And it never felt like that at the start of the season under Tim Clancy. So collectively, the players and the staff have to fix that and they have to become hard to beat.
So the other end of the table, you're a man who goes for the positive, I think, generally speaking. So would you have hope that Derry and our Bowes can keep Shamrock Rovers honest and make a title challenge out of this?
Yeah, I really hope they do. Ultimately, I think Rovers are going to win the league, but I hope they do. It feels to me like, on paper, the best squad to go after Rovers is Derry, but actually it feels like Bowes are best equipped to do that.
What's the difference there?
I think it just looks like there's more cohesion around the group. It feels like there's more togetherness about them. going back to Cork, when I seen Bowles scoring against Cork, the way they celebrate, there looks like there's a great group there. It looks like there's a lot of young, hungry players and a bit of experience sprinkled into. I think the adversity they had at the start of the season seems to have brought them all together, management, staff, and it feels like they're just on a better path, where it just feels like they are second guessing themselves. They're signing a lot of players, getting rid of a lot of players. A little bit of noise when the players are let go, which is obvious, and there's a lot of change in the shapes. And when I look at Derry and I see them going down to Sligo in the last league game, that's the opportunity to go and get yourself in the title race, and it just failed and failed miserably. So I don't have as much confidence in them putting the run together than I do with Bowles. So for the league title race wise, nothing got to do with the have you ever won a treble show. For the league title race, I hope Bowles win tonight, because okay. I think they're more likely to give us it.
Yes.
And that doesn't mean I want Bowles to beat Rovers in the league either. Still have to go back to Tala after here. But I just hope Bowles win tonight. I think they're more likely to give us the title race.
That's what you hope will happen. What do you think will happen tonight between Derry and Bowles?
Probably Derry win.
Right. So all those three games, 7:45 start tonight.
Huge game for Galway, by the way. Must be pointed out.
Yeah, go ahead. You got Galway Waterford.
And just real quick, for both of them teams, because Sligo's momentum at the moment, and to touch Sligo, we're not talking about Sligo, but touching them real quickly, is they've signed a lot of experienced League of Ireland people. People know how to, you know, you don't concede after a minute and a half in Tolka Park. You're not sure. You clear your lines, all the basic stuffs, and James McManus and people like that. Just doing a Ryan O'Kane. He's just signed really well. And so they have a bit of momentum, and you're talking about, you know, things going your way with Rod earlier on. There's no reason why, but Sligo, you feel like, could catch Galway or Waterford if they're not careful. So it's a big, big night for Waterford and Galway, because I think 3 points for them is huge.
Will things go the way for Evan Ferguson at Roma? We were kind of discussing this. I know Cullum and Jer were discussing this over the last number of days on the show, and whether or not it's a good move. And Keith Tracy was a little tentative. Obviously, still a little bit optimistic as to what he can do there. Good move.
Yeah, I think it's a brilliant move, and I think I understand where Keith's coming from. I get it. I'm obviously very close to the situation. I spent the last 2 weeks on holidays in the same place as mum and dad, like actually the same villa, so I had to listen to them. And it's amazing how they, like, their stress of hoping a move comes is completely different to what we talk about in the media. That's real life stuff. That's something about your 20-year-old kid and all of that stuff. So that's just an interesting insight to it. But I think this move is really positive. I think what you're seeing is, and I purposely stayed away from it. It was difficult because, as I said, we were in the same, literally, we travelled together and stayed together. So, but I think this move suits Evan. I think he had other options, and for whatever reason, this manager has convinced him, and he's convinced by this manager.
Gasparini,
when you think about you. The best way to understand Gasparini for me is when you look at that Atalanta side, and predominantly plays with a back three. So why am I talking about a back three in terms of Evan? 99% of the time you play either with a one centre forward and two behind him, or two centre forwards and one behind him. So you can see if you think of someone like Luckman, people would remember, done really well for them. He sort of played in that position where he wasn't a striker. But I actually think Evan can play in that Luckman position at times and actually give the manager what he wants. He wants sometimes two up front, and sometimes he wants one and a half, if that makes, I don't know whether that makes sense, people listening on the radio. But Evan, actually, we've seen the way he plays at Brighton, can link the ball really well and almost be
so you mean
nine and a half.
One of the two behind the one?
No, so Evan will either be as the main centre forward or play in a two up front.
Right,
okay, and he'll have two number sixes and one sort of number 10, we call it, okay, for people to understand, and then two centre forwards. But the times the manager wants to play with one up front and sort of two behind, and I think Evan can do that, and also gives, so your manager, you have to try and think inside the manager's head. Why is he looking at Evan Ferguson? What's he seeing when he's scouting him? He's saying, this fella can score goals, I think he can play as a number 9, you look at his last game for Ireland, what a brilliant finish. You look at his earlier goals for Brighton, brilliant finish. But also, look, he plays for Brighton and he links the play really well. So if I'm looking for that, and the manager sticks to his principles of play, like his principles of plays are brilliant. And we're going to talk a lot about Roma, I presume. Hopefully Evan plays and this move works out for him. But like it's mad what he does in one sense. He has no shape in his... So if one of his back three is Mark and Cullum goes off on a little walk, his back three goes with him. Mm. And it's mad stuff. It's high and press. It's follow people around. And I think his style in... I don't know how to explain it properly in the two and the one and the one and the two behind him will suit Evan. I think he fits into two positions. Therefore, I think he will play quite a lot for them. But... I still say, and as someone really close to him, and is that it's okay to say, but there's a little bit of, you've got to do it now. Got to do it. Mm. I still say, from his, I'm his uncle who's not his uncle, if that makes sense. Yeah. Mm. I still say from that side of it, I go, he's only 20, lads. Compare where he is to people like Robbie Keane at that age and all of these... I heard someone mention Mo Salah last week. All this stuff, compare that force for a second. But at the same time, I still think it's time where Evan goes and goes, boom, I'm here, I belong here. And he sort of, without saying that directly, saying to people, no, this is the move for me. Very easy. He's had clubs where he could have stayed in his house that he bought recently. He could have lived in his own bedroom. And he's taken this choice because he believes this is right for his career. I just think that's brilliant in terms of, he wasn't forced into this move. If anything, he probably would have been pushed in maybe a different direction, and he feels this is the right move for him. So I just think it's set up for him. The difference now is, and last night's match, let's not get excited about it, but last night's match is a good tell that he hasn't taken the summer off. I know there's been pictures here and there, but he's taken a few days off for different bits and pieces. He's ready, and he's able to... hit the ground running. That's why I think it's important this move got done early. Sometimes you get lost as a player, where they, if you think of Brighton, they've lost a couple of players and will we hold on to him? No, I'm not saying he's pushed for a move, but he's got himself sorted and go, no, I'm a Roma player, I'm ready to go. And first game of the season, barring any touch wood, bad luck, Evan is ready to be selected. That hasn't been the case over the last
You mentioned yesterday's game. We have footage of it here. You said you hope he plays a lot this season. We all do as well. Certainly hope he scores as many as he did yesterday. It was four goals. Now, it's only a training game, like you say, against amateur players. There's not even shirt numbers here. But talk us through these goals, Vinny.
Well, the header is something I think Evan can do and do a little bit more. But the running in behind part.
Look at that finish.
That's something he can. Yeah. We've seen that style of finish for Ireland, if you remember that goal, that sort of right foot finish. And go back to that running over the shoulder. That's not something you would have got off Brighton.
Yeah.
But the one thing the manager does is puts the ball in the box and quickly. And that will suit Evan when you're at Brighton. And I'm not being critical of Brighton, but I think it's a little bit like you get to the end line and come back, pass under the last two previous managers. But for me, I think this goal typifies the quality Evan has.
What's he doing here for people who can't see?
It's the way he receives it on the back foot, but it's the second and third touch where...
Turns him
and then gets it into a shooting position and then finishes. And we've seen that if you go back to... There was one of his early goals where that sort of... able to get it onto his other foot very quickly, where there's no panic and there's a control to his finish. And I think Evan, like any young player, can improve his finishing, but he is a natural finisher. But if I was a Brighton fan watching Brighton week in, week out, I'd be going, is he a natural finisher? Because we're not seeing him being sort of a fox in the box. You're seeing him coming to show for the ball off Lewis Dunk, like your centre half, while you've got your two wingers flying by you. That's the Brighton way of playing, where now this manager is completely different. Balls into the box, and I'm not talking about big crosses, but there'll be a mixture of all them stuff. So I think the style of the manager will really suit Evan's style, and therefore it's up to him now, but therefore there's an opportunity to score goals.
Liam Brady's time in Italy is a bygone era in the 80s, where you really had to learn the language, you were forced to. But we were speaking with Keith yesterday about Evan Ferguson integrating into the Roma dressing room, and he said regardless of the changes since the 80s, it will still be a predominant dressing room speaking Italian or another language that's not English. And I know in your interactions with Evan Ferguson, it's often you're not talking about football, it's life in general. But how do you think you'll adapt to the cultural change and that aspect of it?
I think now modern clubs are completely different. I think
they'll help them.
Like, for example, I just seen a video of the training ground from his dad, like, and it's fascinating that they do double sessions and do double sessions. They go to bed then in the afternoon, and it's effectively every player has their own bedroom in the hotel. So once you're not going home, like back in the day, maybe Liam would probably tell you this, if I heard Liam speak about it, you might go home at 10 o'clock or after training at 12 o'clock and not see anyone till the following morning. Yeah. It's completely different now. The world has changed. So they'll have little minders around the place and people will bring them here, there and everywhere. And I think it's like anything. I mean, someone I mentioned is someone like Richie Dunn, I slag him over this, but if he can pick up French, Italian head like that, then Evan can pick up a bit Italian. I'm not worried about it.
So yeah, what was he like with languages in school?
he wasn't in school all the time. I always slag him over that. he can't add two and two because he never went to bloody school. He was too busy playing football. I joke, of course. He done well in school, but not like he never got into the depths of a leaving cert. So
I know, of course,
French,
yeah,
and or Italian and all that stuff. So I think that'll come to him. And we all know this from life experience, like, if you're going to order a cup of coffee for the first time in Italian, it's going to be difficult. But if you order that same cup of coffee five times in 1 week, then eventually you learn how to order.
Has he been on Duolingo like Trent?
No, absolutely not. Well, to be fair, he hasn't been preparing for a year to go to Italy, yeah, like Trent was. Let's put it that way. So I think it's really positive. But I don't understand some of the noise that comes with it, but I understand some of the question marks on it. Like, he is only 20, let him breathe. But I'm looking forward to go to Rome. It looks an amazing city, so I'm looking forward to it. I just want Ryanair, Aer Lingus to look after us on the flights and not get too heavy on them.
Ryanair, very socially media aware, mm-hmm, so that should be good.
Yeah, I was checking out the flight, and I'll give you an example, right? Yeah. Shows you the interest. I knew this deal was happening before, mm, other people, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at the flight the first game, thinking they're not bad.
Alanya up first, isn't it?
Yeah, and then it got announced, and like there's an extra 100 quid on it. I'm going, oh. So it just shows you, in Ireland we love our sports people, mm, and there's no doubt. Obviously, there's a certain amount of people have booked, and there will be a good few people on that flight or them flights to the first game. Irish people love they're sports people, don't they? There will be a huge, yeah, interest. And you find is that a lot of the modern kids now sort of, I know that through a few friends of mine, they follow Evan. So they'll have a Brighton jersey and now they're looking for the Roma jersey, which is good. Or whoever it is, they'll follow certain players, like, you know, whether it's Troy Parrott or whatever. So, it's really exciting time. And, you know, please God it works out for him, yeah, because... Does it? I'm convinced there's a star in the making, and 6 months ago, 7, 8, 9 Premiership clubs wanted him.
Yeah, yeah.
This window, still Premiership clubs wanted him. So despite the noise or the way we look through things in green tinted glasses, he's still hot property. So it's up to him now to score the goals.
Salah wore the number 11 jersey. I'm just looking up here. Same number Ferguson has picked.
No pressure, eh?
Roma, no pressure.
No pressure.
Yeah, yeah. Some big players have worn that number. Yeah, looking forward to seeing it, how it operates. Did you event, Nesta?
No, I think we're all good. I think, yeah, we're out of time, actually. Yeah,
up on time.
Yeah. Jim McGuinness for my old mate Jim McGuinness for the All Ireland on Sunday.
You're behind the Donegal bandwagon.
Well, he's done his pro license.
You did it with him.
Yeah, well, he was part of that brilliant course. Robbie Keane, Damien Duff, Keith Andrews, Paddy McCarthy. They've all done on. I've gone the other way, and the rest of them are gone winning trophies and manage a high level. So, big Jim. Hopefully he does the business on Sunday. Don't know anyone from Kerry, so I'm not too worried. Don't follow him, don't he go?
Lovely. Yep, we're looking forward to that game. We're going to preview that game very shortly. Vinny, thanks, Vinny, for coming in. And don't forget, we've live commentary of the League of Ireland Off the Ball this season. As Vinny already mentioned, Stephen Doyle hitting the road with Johnny Dunleavy to bring you live coverage of the relegation dogfight between Cork City and Sligo Rovers. Tune in to OTB Sports Radio for the 7:45 PM kickoff time.
Off the Ball, GAA.
Cork were nearly too honest. They were doing their best to play the game. Kill the game. Take off their helmet. The ref has to stop the game. Like, do something.
No, it is. Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.